Okay, we'll introduce our panel now. The focus of tonight is around digital communication and work-life balance. It's the way we use different platforms to communicate personally and professionally, and we have a great panel here to answer some of your questions. So while they're speaking, we'd like you to think of questions, and we'd like you to be tweeting as well. So Lynn Smith is one of our panelists this evening. Lynn has worked in the media throughout her working life after editing Gippsland's largest newspaper, the La Trobe Valley Express, for 12 years and spending 8 years as general manager of the Gippsland Times in Sale. Lynn is now sharing her experience as a mentor and trainer of establishing journalists. She regularly travels throughout Victoria, visiting newsrooms to support young journos. She is a director of WordWise Communications and keeps busy with public relations work. Lynn lives in beautiful Tyres.
With you.
Which is where I live as well. And her front door is always open for a wine, which is excellent. And it's great to have her as part of the panel. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you.
I'm very pleased to introduce Emily Rayner at the end of our panel here. Emily has leadership experience in the commercial radio world, including heading up digital strategy at Nova. She is now the highest level female at Fairfax Media's The Weekly Review, where she oversees the magazine's digital print and social media channels. She's currently on maternity leave with her second child, so she knows all about the juggle. And Emily reportedly makes the most of Melbourne's dynamic retail and hospitality scene and is frequently spotted having a cheeky sherry at Levita, which I tried last weekend and it's very good actually. Thank you, Simon. If anyone ever makes it there, sherry is not just for the Christmas cake, let me tell you. She also enjoys looking at things she can't afford at the David Bromley showcase store in Windsor, or crying into her beer at the footy as the Demons lose another game at the G, which has not been as many this year, has it? So yeah. I'm a Dockers supporter, so there's been a lot more crying on my end. So, everyone, please welcome Emily Rayner.
And Julia Keady Blanche makes up our panel this evening. Julia spent the first 10 years of her career working in media, including as a journalist at the Gippsland Times and sub-editor at Rural Press. She spent the last 10 years of her career working on large-scale social change projects and developments, having added a master's in philanthropy and social investment to her tool belt. Julia Keady leads X Factor, a network of highly skilled associates bringing more than 150 years' experience in delivering exceptional outcomes in third sector, government and corporate arena. Julia has created a platform that supports a ratio of work-life balance that works for her, but also supports flexible employment for women around the country. She is known in the philanthropic community for being the founding CEO of the Australian Women Donors Network, where she built a network which has advanced women's philanthropy in Australia. She's not shy of a challenge, and this is also reflected in her colourful and adventurous life. She's crossed the Atlantic Ocean on a yacht, made cocktails for Eddie Murphy, learnt a salsa in Cuba, and travelled through many countries and is now living back in Gippsland, where she enjoys the best of country life with her husband and son, Oliver. Thank you, Julia.
We'll just start out generally asking a question. Just explain about what you do day to day and how you're involved with the media right now. We'll start with you, Lynn.
Well, as soon as I wake up, it starts. I think I'd probably be one of those people you call a news junkie. But 4 years ago, I made the decision to stop full-time work and working busier than ever now with our own business. And no day's ever boring. There's always something interesting happening in our lives, but I could wake up in Tyres. This week I've been working in Melbourne for clients, but Yeah, it's great. My partner probably wouldn't say that I'm a very good partner at times. I couldn't even remember that Laura sent me some questions tonight. I said, what questions? I don't remember questions. So I'm probably the antichrist of work-life balance. So if you want to know about that, I'm not the person to speak to.
My morning starts sadly at 6 a.m. with a little person coming up and going, "Mommy, Mommy, I took my own nappy off." That's how my day starts. And then I throw him next to me in bed and I open up my phone and I check who's emailed me from overnight, overseas clients, check my Twitter account, make sure Malcolm Turnbull stopped stalking me. And I'm straight onto media and I've got a little one next to me watching Paw Patrol, which is show of choice right now. But what is my day can bring anything when you're working, when you have clients. And this last week's probably, you know, an example. I have been away for the last 3 days and on my way home now to East Gippsland, and been up in Sydney and just working with clients, and some of our clients are very diverse. Pretty much at the end of the day, what our work's about is helping our clients achieve a social impact, a social dividend through whatever it might be. So we have clients that are private philanthropists, we have business clients, we work with charities, philanthropic foundations, number of different type of entities, all with a sort of a common social impact goal, and offer a suite of strategic development skills, I guess, whether that's market, product, program, business development. And the business model is set up as well to, it's kind of a profit for purpose business model, which is emerging more and more all the time. And we support the growth of women social entrepreneurs. So women who aren't waiting until the end of their life to put their money where and their influence into social good, but, you know, getting cracking on it in their 20s, their 30s, coming up with amazing ideas that are going to help move this planet forward. So yeah, that's me.
My mornings at the moment are quite different to what they were 4 months ago. I've just had a little baby girl. So she's up at the crack of dawn, 4 o'clock in the morning, feeding every 3 hours, fun. She came up with me tonight and I had to stop in the middle of peak hour traffic and feed her because she was screaming in the car, so that was fun. But generally speaking, the way that we work at the weekly review is we're very much about what's happening in Melbourne, and we look at what's happening within broader Melbourne and then drill it down into the 8 different publications that we super serve, essentially dealing with hyperlocal content. So when I get up in the morning, I'm really kind of feverishly looking through to find out what is happening right across the city. See if there's anything that we can fill in with our journos when we get into to work in the morning. We have 3 different streams. So we have our print editor, we have our social media editor, and we have our online editor. And those guys really work together with the journos who work across each patch that we cover from our magazine's perspective, right across from Stonington, Burundara, through into Diamond Creek, Eltham, right up into the east. We finish the day by really kind of looking at how our stories are trending, what's engaging our audiences, and kind of wrap it up and work out what we're going to be doing for the next day to sort of give us a bit of a track for moving forward in the news cycle.
Lovely, thank you for those introductions and those insights into your days. Just if you think of a question and you're on Twitter, you can tweet your questions with the hashtag GippsNews, or you can just think of a question and Sally's gonna do the roving mic later. Yeah, just told her. But first of all, Lynn, what are the biggest changes that you've seen in your media career?
Obviously technology. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. I'm not very old, but I actually started working on a typewriter, and an old typewriter with ribbon, and then we got an electric typewriter and we thought, oh, this is fantastic. Had one of those golf balls on it, you know, and you didn't have to white out any mistakes. So then, of course, when computers came, they revolutionised our industry. And now, to the point, well, I was up in Mildura a couple of weeks ago. I do a lot of training up there with the Regional Daily, and not only do they put out a daily paper, but they have a really, really busy social media site. But these, when a local television station closed their branch and pulled out, they actually produce their own online news now. So it's like a television news service. And I spend my life mentoring these young journalists, but I've certainly been mentored by them. So I find that the biggest change is technology, but actually the news hasn't changed at all. It's just presented differently, and you access it how it suits you. I always said I'd never subscribe to an online newspaper. I now subscribe to I like reading it in a digital format because I like reading the newspaper. So I now subscribe to The Australian and The Age, Sun Region Daily. So I love community newspapers. I love rural newspapers and regional newspapers, and that'll never change. And they're not going anywhere. They'll be here for a long time. But I also love radio, I love television, and there's so many opportunities now for young journalists to get your work anywhere. You can do it yourself, you can blog yourself, your own site. So there's so many opportunities. So I'm actually really excited, even though I'm old, to be around today, because it's just getting better and better. I can see us, as long as the NBN gets rolled out to Mars, but I can see us actually working all over the universe.
I'm not used to these microphones.
I'll just ask our other two panel members here, what the opportunities you think there are for regional and rural media and journalists, given the landscape has just changed so dramatically with the internet?
I think prior to being at Nova, I was at Southern Cross Austereo for 6.5 years. And at Southern Cross Austereo, I was responsible for the digital content strategy right around the country, and that included 120 regional stations. And I think what we saw during Black Saturday was really interesting in the way that communities really started to serve the news, and communities really tapped into their local media organisations to be able to really explode the stories that were happening, on their doorsteps, essentially, literally. And I think that when you see the power of the individual and their ability to be able to have a voice and tell a story, I don't think there's been any other time whereby anyone who has the ability to tell a story can tap into news can tap into media and essentially create those stories and amplify them across the board. So I think that if you're good at telling stories, there's nothing stopping you right now from getting your foot in the door and being able to open the door to a fantastic career and really develop it, whether that be across radio, be that across television, be that across
or your own YouTube channel, right?
Totally, exactly, yeah, you know, so it's a really, really exciting time.
Yeah, I guess my answer is probably from a slightly different perspective, given I'm not within a media outlet at the moment, but probably because
my work and the work with the clients that we do is often on...
Can you just explain a little bit about what you do with your clients right now and the business you have? Just to give... We had a discussion at the table earlier, so I feel like I already know, but it'd be nice for the broader audience.
So basically X Factor, when I set up X Factor, was around working with organisations that had a for-purpose mission, basically, and that was the best that I could distill it down to, which allowed the ability for us to work with businesses. So I didn't want to just limit it to working with charitable organisations, not-for-profit organisations, and sort of open up the remit, I guess. So on any given day, we can be setting up, I'll give you real-life examples. At the moment, we're working with a lady in her 70s who is looking at what she can do with the millions of dollars that she's inherited through her father's business. She knows that she's, you know, probably only got another 5, 10, 15 years to live. She's worked out what her children are going to have from that estate, and she wants to do leave a big legacy. And she's quite particular about what she wants to do, and she wants to set up a very strategic program. So that's one example of what we do. So working with private philanthropists and helping them set up their giving strategies, so in that philanthropic sort of space. And I've just come home from working 2 days on site with a business in the Blue Mountains, which is a large business in the Blue Mountains, employ 150 staff, have 1 million visitors go through their business every year, and they actually wanted to start dedicating 5% of their profits into the community, and they don't know how. And they know that they've got some certain social objectives that they want to meet around the environment, protecting the Blue Mountains, working in poverty and disadvantage in their area, but they've got no idea where to start. And so that's where we come in with our skill set, understanding the landscape, understanding how you would actually partner up with organisations and have collaborations to sort of do that, meet those sort of social objectives. Yeah. But I think to answer that question, I think one of the things that I've seen is this amazing migration of people coming back to live in regional and rural Australia. I think an amazing migration of people from the city that have decided to live in rural and regional Australia. And I think, well, not really.
Sort of,
but
went away and came back.
I've worked in a lot of regional projects, and I think there's amazing, we're on the precipice of a lot of change around the world and a lot of disruption. And there's people that are driving this in rural and regional Australia, and it's not news, but it fits in that human interest aspect. And I think that we can be celebrating more of the amazing people that are leading global change within their communities in different ways and forms. That would be my comment on the
silly question. Speaking of media, social change and social media, tell us a little about your interaction with Malcolm Turnbull and the debate you had with him about the access to technology in regional and rural areas.
Yeah, so does anyone know about the Twitter stoush with NBN? What happened 2 years ago, me and Malcolm? No, okay. All right. I had to go back online actually and find what the original tweet said, so I didn't, you know, misrepresent him. My husband and I moved to Ocean Grove a few years ago before coming back to Gippsland, and when we bought a house out there, you know what it's like, you buy a house and then you don't actually really find out what your technology capability is until you actually ring up Telstra and get plugged into the system. And I was really peeved. You know, we were on cable and we were in Melbourne, and I'm thinking, we're going out to Ocean Grove, it's right on the outskirts of Geelong, you know, it's not in the boondocks. And we were basically going back to dial-up speed. Yeah, so I got off the phone from Telstra and I felt a Twitter moment come on, and I had never done anything like this. And I tweeted, I'm really actually impressed that I did this in 140 characters. Bought a house in Ocean Grove, full stop. No NBN, full stop. No cable, full stop. No ADSL2, full stop. No ADSL1, full stop. Back to the dongle, prehistoric, at Turnbull Malcolm. Not good enough. Yeah. Didn't realise, my husband's a psychologist, didn't realise that I had pushed his not good enough button, which with a narcissist is like you'll provoke a response.
do tell us what that response was.
20 seconds later, I get back to work and I get just curious. Connectivity was so vital. Sorry, I did the voice. Just curious, if connectivity was so vital to you, why did you buy a house where there was no broadband available? I'm not sure which response I had first around whether I was pissed off on behalf of all of rural and regional Australia, or pissed off as a business owner, or pissed off that someone that I paid the salary of just insulted me. So I wrote back. You're saying people who want their children to grow up in regional Australia don't deserve access to modern services? At the age. Right back at you, mister.
That's awesome.
He writes back, no, I am simply, sorry, got to the voice. No, Julia, I am simply asking whether, given the importance of broadband to you, you checked availability before buying your house, your new house. So I politely wrote back, of course I did, you bloody idiot. It goes on and on and on, and what happened after that was quite remarkable, because it could have just ended up in Twitterverse and nothing came of it, but it was retweeted thousands of times. It's been retweeted tens of thousands of times in the last 2 years. It became a message to the then communications minister from a number of people around the country. We are not happy. You are getting this wrong. Somebody, this is not about politics now. This is about the most important piece of infrastructure in this country in our lifetime. And the conversation continues to the point that I say, listen, I'm one of 1 million small business people in this country, powering this country. I've got to get back to work. Give me a call. And we ended up speaking on the phone. And there was media interviews left, right and centre. And it was just crazy. But I think at the end of the day, it was I became the pin-up girl for NBN and the voice of rural and regional people. And it sent a pretty loud message the number of times it was retweeted.
What did you get connected?
Oh, that's a whole other story. Oh. Then you get the call from Telstra. Oh, hi. Yeah, I just saw all the crazy stuff that went on with you and Turnbull. And yeah, so basically in a nutshell, I said, don't connect me up just because of what happened. Go and connect everyone else up on the waiting list first and then let us know. So we ended up a couple of months later getting onto, I don't know, ADSL2 or something. Mm. Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing about social media and digital communication is there's so many conversations that are happening in that space. Your conversation got picked up by a huge network of people and was seen by tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. Getting your issue or your story or yourself or out there can be really hard. Emily, what do you think? How do you try and cut through on social media in the work that you do with the Weekly Review?
I think that a lot of it is to do with the timeliness. In fact, it's a vast majority of it is to do with timeliness. It doesn't wait, it's in live time. So, you know, speed is of the essence. If a story's breaking, you've got to be on it. If a subject's trending, then you need to be across it, because it just doesn't wait. Social media doesn't wait for anyone. And I think that with that, there are some, you know, issues, definitely. You know, we have a great team of sub-editors that work with us who also realise that speed's of the essence. So they're fact-checking and they're running through things as we're putting things live. And you know, it really takes a combined effort to make sure that what you're putting out there is correct and viable, and is worthwhile, a worthwhile part of the conversation. It's not just extra noise, and I think that that's a really important distinction to make as well. What are you adding? What can people take away? Is it useful? And if it's useful, essentially you find that it engages and the stories spread. And that's what everybody really wants at the end of the day.
Just still on social media, there's a lot of people in the audience that aren't journalists, and it's okay, we love you too, but what are some tips for using social media, and can you use it to generate mainstream media attention for your cause, for your opinion, for a community event? What are the tips there for all three of you?
I really think that what's sort of interesting right now is especially for small businesses, there's no better time to really kind of understand what your brand story is, and what you're doing. That everybody's got something of interest, you know, and everybody has stories to tell. So find out what your story is, and create a tone of voice and start talking to your communities, people that are interested in what you've got to say. And I think that you can really utilise social media through that sort of content marketing approach, essentially, is one of the kind of buzzwords. But it's worthwhile looking into if you're a small business. Check out content marketing. Do a bit of research on it. There's a pretty interesting group that I follow called NewsCred. They send out a weekly email, which is really interesting. And there's some really good tips and tricks there in terms of strategies and ways that they approach things. The other group that we work with as the Weekly Review is Domain, so it's real estate. And Domain has really been working hard to develop news stories out of real estate, essentially, and using social channels to be able to get those messages across. And if you follow Domain on Facebook, you'll see that, you know, there's everything in there, from kind of humorous pieces on how to fold a fitted sheet, to you know, what's going on with the property boom in Australia, which of course would be a standard story that you would expect Domain to cover. But then, you know, interior design tips and basically anything that is around buying a house. Renting versus buying, and finding those stories that people are going to engage with right across the board gives you an ability to be able to connect with people at different cycles of their sort of purchasing journey. So yeah, find out what your story is and get it out there.
I was just going to say that all of you, the community, on mass, are really journalists in some form, because I think the most interesting thing is when there's something like, for instance, the floods at the moment. You know, I know all the local newspapers and the ABC and television. I mean, people are constantly sending, tweeting or whatever, they're sending their pictures. So as a local media organisation, you don't have the luxury of having photographers go, you know, 50, 60 Ks to one job and then in the other direction. So everybody becomes our journalists through that sort of thing. When the bushfires, and I've even seen, well, you saw the video, someone took it on a phone of Hillary Clinton going all wobbly in the legs. You know, that was just someone standing there with their phone taking a video. So even, you know, our big media organisations now, I've seen phone photos on the front page of The Age or The Herald Sun, because people are there on the spot and we can't be. So all of you in your own way, you know, are journalists.
We'll get to some questions from the floor soon, so have your questions ready. But when we're communicating online, and I think everyone mentioned it in the start when you were talking about your day-to-day world, you get up, you look at your phone, you're seeing what sort of conversations are happening, what news is out there. How do you manage your work-life balance when there's stories, when there's conversations happening all of the time? Lynn, do you want to start and then we can have everyone's observations?
Like I said, I'm the antichrist when it comes to work-life balance, particularly working at home. Some days I don't get out of my jammies. If I have a Zoom meeting, just do it all from the neck up. So point the laptop here. That's technology. It's fantastic. So I actually can't keep away from it. I have to know what's going on. You know, people say, you know, I have a digital detox. Well, it just doesn't work with me. I've tried. Last Thursday at Inverloch, I thought I'm going to have a lovely day. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to read my book. I'm not going to look at the phone, anything. I think it lasted 22 minutes I timed it before I was, you know, checking Twitter or tracking my emails. So I absolutely don't have a work-life balance at all. I thought working from home would be great because it gives me flexibility, and it does, because your office is just in the boot of the car and it goes everywhere with you. I find it's a distraction often working in my home because I'll put a load of washing on, or I'll see a bit of dust, or I might have another good coffee. So, and then I'm working into the night. So I find it better if I relocate my office, as I've done to Melbourne this week. I find I'm much better when I don't have to worry about washing and cooking and stuff like that. Although I have a very good partner who's a big help. But yeah, no, don't. I can't give you any advice on work-life balance. Sorry.
Julia, can you talk a little bit about how you engage people right around the country contracting out work in a flexible way, and how you've sort of made flexible work practices part of what you do?
Yeah, sure. We kind of look at it two ways. One is that we only take on clients that share the same values that we share. So we tell our clients up front, you know, we're mums, and our kids come first, and if you don't like it, there's some other agencies I can recommend. Generally what we find is that a lot of our clients are mums, and I think together we're sort of trying to find new ways of how we actually are mums and what are the business models that we need to adapt, because I don't think we've ever really questioned that a lot. And so then the other side is that the wider team is, you know, have that same conversation with the women that work on the projects with us around the country. And I think the thing that they all found frustrating about working within the workplace was that it's very limited options. It's pretty much part-time or full-time, and people look down on you when you're leaving to go pick up your kids because you get to leave at 3 and not work into the night, sort of a thing. And so try to sort of, what we do is try and work out where people are at, looking at it every 90 days. So what's coming up for you the next 90 days? And so people can say, well, I know my mum's going to be having an operation. And we're all primary carers at one end of the spectrum, either our parents or our children. And so we kind of keep it really open. Mum's going to have an operation. I think I'm going to be down to like 10, 15 hours a week. Or, you know, my kids are going away on camp. There's a week that I'm going to have extra hours. And so we're trying to, and it takes a lot of time to sort of create a model like this. But I think it's going to be some of the new ways that we think about doing business. And especially as we move away from big businesses back into kind of more smaller businesses in the economy. So yeah, it's looking at that from, you know, we chuck out the idea of a work-life balance. I got rid of that sort of terminology a few years ago because there's no such thing. I think it's just about what is the balance within that time frame. And I think 90 days, kind of, we look at it on a weekly basis and then a sort of a quarterly basis for what's going on in people's lives. Yeah.
I think as well, there has to be an element of trust there. You know, I think that when I look at, you know, the team that I work with, there's a lot of working women, there's a lot of working men, there's single dads, there's single mums, you know, and you really just, I don't know, my team puts in 120%. So if they need to leave early to go into a school sports day, or they'll make up the time. You know, it's just trust and knowing who you're working with and kind of honouring them as individuals. And I think increasingly businesses just need to do that to get respect back. You know, it's a two-way street. And I thought that was interesting what you were saying before, Julia, because I find for myself, I tend to think of my weeks and I plan my weeks out. I work from home, I do a half day on Fridays from home, and that's generally my time when I work on things like, you know, PowerPoint presentations and strategy reports and all the kind of grindy nuts and bolts things, because I know that in the week when I'm with FaceTime with my team, I want to be 100% present and there. So it's almost kind of compartmentalising your week and working out where the best play, like playing to your strengths as the week goes on. So, yeah.
We're going to throw it open to the audience now if you've got questions. We have a roving microphone, so raise your hand. Hi. We've got a couple of questions on Twitter. Do you want to start with that? Or?
Yeah. Do you want to scroll down, Cookie, because there was a couple of questions on our feed.
Unless there's someone in the audience, or can I see a hand out there? Anyone? Oh, right at the back here.
Someone
asked. Hi, everyone.
First one, Rex. Do you want to introduce yourself for us?
I was just wondering, don't you ever get exhausted of all this? Because in a past life, when I was a journalist, I did the tweeting, you know, the videos, the Facebook, and it's just exhausting. How do you not lose momentum is, I guess, what I'm trying to ask. Thanks.
I guess it's, I don't know, it's just sort of a passion, really, and it's just, it feels like that is life. To the point around work-life balance, so I think it's just when you you realise that that's how news is or stories are brought together and kind of collated. That's the driving force for sort of bringing all of those elements of media together and then getting them out there. And I think as well, you know, you kind of have a little bit of that news junkie in you, I think, when you work in media. And there's no greater thrill than one, you know, the ego of seeing your story get spread, and two, seeing, you know, page impressions go up, likes go up, knowing that people are engaging with your story and it's resonated in some kind of way. So there's definitely a kick out of that as well, if I'm completely honest.
Do you want to answer that? Or? I was just going to say, I love what I do. I've been a journalist for a long time, and I don't think I can remember being really, really tired at times, but never a day when I haven't been excited or wanted to go to work. And, you know, I just think I've really had the most fortunate life, and I've got a lot more years to go yet. But I think one thing about the print media, you often feel you're working within this small cocoon. And for instance, at the Express, and there's some Express journalists here tonight, you don't realise that probably up to 70,000 people are reading what you write. With social media, you get that an instant feedback, which I love too. As I said, I embrace social media just as much as I love print. That's my first love. But I think in terms of getting a response and a reaction, you get it straight away. You don't have to wait till cranky old whoever down the road rings up and writes a letter and gives you an earful. You get it then. So I think that's exciting too.
Yeah. We've got another question.
Hi, my name's Jackie. I don't work in media, sort of. That's a half a lot. I am very interested in how Malcolm Turnbull's change of laws, which will probably happen sometime, will affect how we diversify, how regional media is going to diversify. because if they bring in the change of ownership laws, it is going to have a very big effect on the regional communities. We don't quite realise this yet. I should declare my other hat. I have a business that works for one of the commercial networks as well, so I find things out. So we are going to see a great change in regional media in the near future. How do you think that's going to affect how we all get our stories out?
Are you referring to the cross-media laws?
Yeah, the cross-media laws. Because that will change how all of us look at things. I know it's a silly question for a chef from Urban North to ask, but that's how.
I think it'll probably have more impact on the electronic media than on print media. I've just finished judging a competition, a newspaper competition for Victorian Country Press. You have no idea how many papers there are in regional Victoria that have a circulation of under 3,000. I have to look at them all. And it's absolutely amazing. And they are so important to their community. So in terms of regional and rural newspapers, they're not going anywhere. People, they have a point of difference. The Age is going to disappear next year, at least midweek. But, you know, local papers just have something different. The same as local television, local radio. It's that local that's important, and you can't get it anywhere else.
Community end up being owned by the same media organisation. There's a possibility that in Gippsland that they all become owned by one organisation and everything comes out of one place. That's that. Oh, I understand the local thing. I live in a small town. We rely on our local paper that has a readership of less than 3,000 people.
My personal opinion is I'm not in favour of large-scale media ownership. That's just a personal view. I think we've seen that with Murdoch and what happens and how they influence governments and change governments. So I don't think that's a good thing. As I said, most regional and rural newspapers are independently owned, family owned. Here in Warrigal, it's a family owned business. It's the same, in fact, Fairfax Regionals are the only ones that are going down the gurgler. Sorry, not tri-weeklies and bi-weeklies, but the big regionals. I think it's disgraceful what's happened. It's nothing. It's no reflection on the newspapers. It's the reflection on the management at the top. Should have more women up there.
Hear, hear. We have got a question on Twitter from Lauren Murphy. How do you keep a story timely and balance it across social and print media? Maybe I should ask Laura, the Chief of Staff, that, are these decisions you have to make every day, or?
I've had journos come to me and say, oh no, we can't put that story online. We haven't had it in our radio bulletins yet, and it's going in the news at 6:30 tomorrow morning, so can we hold off on the online story? And I just think online, like our philosophy is online first. It doesn't matter where it breaks as long as you break it. It doesn't, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so when you can get it up online first, and then everything will come after that. And I think it's different audiences as well. It doesn't matter where people are getting their news as long as they're getting it. And if, yeah, if that's on Twitter, if it's on Facebook, if it's on Instagram, if it's on the radio, on the telly or in the paper, it doesn't matter. Just, you know, as long as you're in the space where people want to be.
I'll just add a comment. In the Weekly Times, we're a little bit different because we save very important stories for a front page, unless we think someone else will get it. So it's a different kind of thing because we're only a weekly. But I recently went up to and visited Andrew Mull, who's at the Echuca Times, I think, or Cam. Yeah, he's at Echuca, the Riverine Herald, and he's the editor up there. And we talked about social media, and he said how he had some young people on staff, and they were really interested in getting social media going, and they did. They got to 10,000 followers on Facebook, and then they started seeing their circulation drop. And because they still rely on print media as revenue and to sell ads, it was a massive issue for them. So they've had to go back to holding important stories for a front page, and they release it the same day, but they're not releasing on social media. So I just thought that was a really interesting thing, and this is the challenge that the entire media sector's got about between what do you do with social media versus putting it in your actual publication and or on the radio or whatever you normally used to do. So I don't know if it's an easy thing to answer.
Well, it depends. Yeah, I have my own views on this. You know, weekly papers are the same as the Weekly Times. But if it's a story that you know everybody else is going to be on top of, why would you leave it a week? You wouldn't. Part of your brand and the respect for your local newspaper is the fact that people will go to your website or your Twitter account or your Facebook to see that story, and they'll say, oh, the La Trobe Express got that, they are onto that. However, I'm a great believer in we shouldn't give away our newspaper, our online news free. I think we should have paywalls. I don't see anything wrong with putting teasers up or just showing people that yes, we've got that story. And the challenge for weekly papers or bi-weeklies or tri-weeklies is to get a different angle. You know, that's what we do. We're journalists. We don't follow, we lead. So you've got to get out there, do some legwork and get the different angle for your newspaper. And yes, it is a problem with circulation, but it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's just not now. And you'll find in countries that are ahead of us, like the UK, that regional and rural newspapers, community newspapers, are coming back with their circulation. So, and it is it's just that a lot of our owners have been used to the rivers of gold, and they're not there anymore. So I just think it's an exciting time. You know, it's a challenging time.
Is there
any more questions from the audience?
Oh, here's one.
Yeah. I think there's someone laughing over there.
Like,
is there a joke we don't know about?
I'm not allowed.
It's not. Definitely allowed. We just want to hear the joke.
They're laughing at me.
Hi.
Too
loud. Carolyn Crossley. I run a business, a contemporary arts space in the country, so that's a challenge. It's a bit like a regional newspaper. And I'm also a councillor on the Wellington Shire. I'm just wondering, I'm a news junkie and I use all the forms, but I'm just wondering with the sort of digital media, I still have the newspaper under my bag of eggs in the morning, but with the digital media, the stories are changed, because if you want to send it to somebody else, you can search the person. I actually usually search the writer because they never use the same title. But I also think on the Twitter feed or the Facebook feed, with this instant gratification that the journalist gets, I'm just wondering whether it starts to change the news of what is delivered, because you know if you're delivering product to a Facebook page, you're actually trying to engage a community rather than actually bring a subject of concern to them. And I also feel that it hasn't occurred yet, I feel, in the pieces of paper, that in the desire to have a balanced say on a subject, that you interview a loony as well, which seems to happen on the TV or the radio. So I'm just wondering, over time, are we going to have the gratification of the journalist dictating what comes out in news because they know that's going to be a story that's going to engage?
Who wants to take that one? I do too much talking.
I think that, when I was saying that, I was just, talking about that is one of the motivations, I think. I don't think it is the motivation, because it just wouldn't connect. It wouldn't work if that was the case, if journos were just running around stories that they found interesting and were, getting the hits. Because essentially, if you think of social media, it doesn't exist within a forum of just one community. The point is that individual story, that individual page, will essentially, if it's connecting with people, or that individual conversation that you had, It will connect and it will evolve, the story will evolve and people will continue to talk about it. And so therefore the story essentially becomes the discourse of a much broader community than it was ever initially perhaps designed for, if you were talking about it just existing within the forum of the particular brand or media that it was created for, be that television, be that radio, be that print, be that for The Age, be that for The Weekly Times. It suddenly becomes a story which doesn't have boundaries. And I think that that's very interesting. What you see there, I think when we're talking about the issues within the dairy industry, for example, seeing the way that story exploded and people within, you know, the cities were boycotting Coles and Woolworths and not buying the milk and, you know, you saw something become essentially a movement from a story. And I think that really goes to show the power of thinking beyond the walls of any particular medium and thinking beyond the walls of any particular media. And that's far beyond a journalist's byline.
Well, it looks like dessert is arriving, yes. So I think we should wrap this up. Thank you very much to the panel. I want you to put your hands together for these wonderful women that spoke tonight.